Okay, so it's City Talk 105.9. There is an event taking place in the city next week. You might be interested in this. If you are looking for a job, you are looking for an apprenticeship, you're looking for a change in career, maybe you've got a family member who's looking for one of those things, it's happening at the Devonshire House Hotel. It's Stephen Twigg MP's West Derby Jobs Fair, and Stephen Twigg, the West Derby MP, joins us now. Stephen, great to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
You've got a number of jobs and apprenticeships up for grabs. What sort of jobs are they and who can have them?
These are a whole variety of jobs from big and small employers. We've got over 1,000 jobs that we're advertising and 500 apprenticeships that we're advertising, and they're available to anyone who wants to come along next Thursday, 31st of October.
How come you're setting up your own jobs fair?
This is something a number of other MPs have done. My colleague Luciana Berger held one in March of this year. I think it's a really good thing that MPs can do, bringing together local employers, colleges, the city council, apprenticeship providers, to ensure that people get the biggest opportunity they can to get work, but also to get apprenticeships.
I mean, people who are listening to this will be looking for, I'm sure, an absolute whole host of jobs within a whole host of sectors. They'll have a mixture of experience or no experience, or they'll have entire careers behind them that they're looking for maybe something a little bit new. What's the variety like in terms of the employers who are offering positions here?
We've got around 60 different employers offering positions. So we have Alderhay Hospital, which is one of the main employers in my constituency. They're offering opportunities, a whole variety of private sector employers in construction, in retail, and in other areas offering opportunities. And I want to make this clear, this is for people of all ages. So yes, young people, but it's also for people who might have recently lost their job later on in life, opportunities to get jobs, to get apprenticeships, but also to get some training and support. We're going to have a series of sessions being run on things like applying for jobs, how you do your CV, setting up your own business, those sorts of things as well.
I mean, the stats don't make for great reading when you look at a breakdown of job seekers allowance claimants in the last month, even when you compare it even against the wider Northwest region and then the United Kingdom itself. 5.6%, more than 18,000 people in Liverpool without a job. You've got 1,500 on offer here. It's going to be busy, isn't it?
It's going to be very busy. Unemployment in my constituency is not just higher than the national average, it's higher than the Liverpool average, even more than double the national figure. So I know there's going to be a lot of people coming. We've had constituents and others getting in touch. And let me make it very clear, people can just turn up on the day. A lot of people have registered in advance. We've been able to leaflet every household in my constituency. But people who haven't registered in advance, please do come along. And you don't have to live in my constituency. So people from other parts of Merseyside are welcome too.
Why is the rate so high in your constituency? What are people saying to you about why they've not got employment?
Well, I think what we've seen in previous recessions is that cities like Liverpool have suffered more than other parts of the country. There is a long-term trend of unemployment in cities like Liverpool being a lot higher than the national average. Now, obviously holding a jobs fair is really important, but I also have a job of work as an MP to make a case for a different economic policy and also to support the mayor and others in providing job and apprenticeship opportunities for people.
Where are those jobs going to come from, though, in the future?
Jobs in the future are going to come from a whole variety of places. We see new opportunities, for example, here in Liverpool, in things like tourism, in biosciences, in the financial services sector, which is an important source of employment in Liverpool. And even with the cuts that we're seeing in public services, there are still very important opportunities for jobs in the public sector, in health, as I've mentioned, but also in housing. A number of the housing providers like Liverpool Mutual Homes will be represented at my jobs fair next week.
We mentioned that the jobs, let's talk about apprenticeships as well, and a number are on offer from a number of either training services or businesses that people will know. What's the difference between a job and an apprenticeship if you're signing up on day one, if you like? What would be the difference?
The difference with an apprenticeship is it's about giving extra education support and training to prepare people, particularly young people, for the jobs of the future. Now, I think it's really important that we have more apprenticeships in this country, but also that we have high quality apprenticeships. I don't want things to be described as apprenticeships that are simply short training courses. And that's why the people that I'm working with at the jobs fair are high quality apprenticeship providers, for example, City of Liverpool College.
Do those apprenticeships lead on to employment? Do they come with a training period which then leads on to a job at the end of it?
The best apprenticeships will do that. A job at the end of it isn't guaranteed, but a really good quality apprenticeship should either lead on to a job with that employer or should certainly leave the person with much better skills so they're ready for other jobs in the labour market.
The event takes place next Thursday, the 31st, Halloween, at 10 till 4 at Devonshire House Hotel, just off Edge Lane. We'll be talking about it again next week, and I'll point it out in terms of the postcode so people can get there nice and easily. The number of people who will be going down there, presumably not everybody will have a pristine, up-to-date CV ready to go and be absolutely ready for employment on that day. If they want to maybe come down and just maybe get some CV advice, suss out the market as it stands at the moment, is that something that they're able to do?
Definitely, that's something that they can do. So as well as the information about jobs, information about apprenticeships, we have a number of other sessions that are being run by partners. And one of those is exactly on that issue, applying for work and making sure that your CV is up to date and attractive to employers. We also have Premier Inn helping us with interview practice for people who've maybe not had an interview before or who've not done an interview for many years.
And it's not too far for most people, I imagine, Edge Lane for most people around the city. But if you're a resident with Cobalt Housing, I understand there's some help there.
Yes, Cobalt Housing, who are the main social landlord in the Croxteth and Norris Green parts of my constituency, they said if any of their tenants go along, they will reimburse their public transport costs. For those that aren't Cobalt tenants, we also have the ability in our budget to help if transport costs are an issue, and people can contact my office on 259 8718 if they want any advice about transport costs.
We'll put some of the information online as well, Stephen, so people can find out some information too. In terms of the jobs which will be available, have you vetted those people at all on things such as 0 hours contracts being available? 0 hours contracts is something we hear a lot about in the employment market, and it's one of those things that people talk about when they look at record employment figures in the UK, but also record underemployment at the same time. Have you spoken to these people about 0 hours contracts?
Underemployment is a big issue, and I share the concerns that many people have about 0 hours contracts. This is a jobs fair organised by my very small local office, so we haven't been able to vet every single employer who's coming. It may be that amongst the other jobs that are available, there are some 0 hours contracts. What I can say for certain is the vast majority of these jobs are not in that category. These are full and part-time jobs, not based on 0 hours contracts, but there may be some of those that are available that might fall into that category.
Would you encourage somebody who is not currently in employment to take a job on 0 hours contracts, given the effects that it'll have on their benefits and their ability to earn once they're supposedly in work?
One of the things we'll also have at the jobs fair is people giving advice about benefits, including about benefits maximisation. And I think it is always important that people take expert advice before they take a job with 0 hours contracts. To be honest, these contracts cover a multitude of different situations. So what might be right for a student, for example, who might be seeking some work during a student holiday, might be quite different to someone with children for whom there could be big impacts on their benefits. So I think take advice is what I would urge people to do in those circumstances.
In your experience and the people that you speak to within your own constituency, are there people who are willing to take 0 hours contract jobs? Are there people who want 0 hours contract jobs?
Undoubtedly, there are many people who take 0 hours contracts jobs, sometimes because there's no alternative for them. I'm a member of USDOR, the shop workers union, and in parts of the retail and distribution trades, 0 hours contracts are very, very common. It does vary. There are some situations where a 0 hours contract might fit with someone's life if they're only looking for work on a temporary basis. I think what is a real problem is that not just the 0 hours, but also the conditions that are often attached to that by employers in terms of looking for other work as well, which is why nationally Labour has called for changes to be made in the system on 0 hours contracts.
We've got Stephen Twigg with us, the West Derby MP. Jobs fair next Thursday, the 31st of October, and it's happening at the Devonshire House Hotel just off Edge Lane. And we'll have details, some more details about it next week, and we'll talk some more about some of the figures as well. The constituency, it does make for great reading in some of these stats. I mentioned it, the 60th highest of 650 UK constituencies with unemployment rates at the moment. What are your other fellow MPs who are also within that top 60 saying to you about the biggest thing holding back your constituencies and people finding jobs within those constituencies?
I think the biggest thing has been the state of the economy ever since the recession as a result of the economic crash back in 2008. You will always see an impact across the whole country, but it's often some of the great cities, particularly in the north of the country, but not just in the north of the country, that take the longest to come out of those periods of recession. The other issue that certainly I see and a lot of my colleagues talk to me about is for young people, that often young people are the least able to be prepared for these sorts of situations. We've talked about the forgotten 50%, the young people who don't go on to university. We don't yet have the numbers and quality of apprenticeships for young people leaving school or college at 18 that we need. Now, I want to pay great tribute to the work that Joe Anderson and Nick Small have done on this. So we see through Liverpool's own apprenticeship work an increasing number of quality apprenticeships for young people, but we need even more, because I worry a lot about young people who are unemployed for long periods of time. It's especially hard for them to then get work after they've been unemployed for a long period.
Is that Liverpool's biggest jobs issue, if you like, at the moment? Those forgotten 50%, people will look back to the days of the 1980s and at least think, well, those people who lost their jobs then after various cuts from the Conservative government then, they were still specifically trained. They had skills, but they were unable to show it because their industry had been fallen away or cuts had been made, which prevented them doing their jobs. Is this forgotten 50%, does it have the skills? Does it have the ability to go out and find work?
The forgotten 50% covers a multitude of different situations, but I think one of the problems is that young people aren't always leaving school or college with the skills and the qualifications that they need. So this is partly a challenge for schools and for colleges. How far are they preparing the young people who are going to be the plumbers and electricians of tomorrow, as well as the young people who are going to be the doctors and teachers of tomorrow? That's not just about Liverpool. That's a national issue, which for decades this country has lagged behind some of our European partner countries in what people describe as vocational education. So that's one part of it. The other part of it, and this is what employers will often say, is not so much about qualifications, but about confidence, about speaking and listening skills, about how well young people can do in an interview. And I think this is a big challenge, to be honest, not just for the forgotten 50%, because universities will often say the same thing about how much emphasis in our education system that we put on things like speaking and listening skills. And to make a political point about education policy, there is a worry that the present government's shift towards even more of an emphasis on exams might further weaken the need for effective skills in things like speaking and listening and interview technique.
Do you ever get employers saying to you, you know what, we tried to take people on, or we tried to offer people, you know, the opportunities, and in most cases they can't string a sentence together, they don't know how to meet or greet somebody or even pick up a phone in a correct way?
Employers will often say things like that, and I think that does say to us, what are we doing wrong in terms of getting young people who are ready for quite basic things? And speaking and listening is part of that. Now, I think speaking and listening should be promoted in education from a very young age. It can't be something that's left to young people when they're 15, 16, 17. I think it's really important for children in primary schools and in early years settings to be encouraged to speak and listen as well as to read and write. It's just as important that you can speak and listen well as that you can read and write well.
Yeah, there'll be people who'll be heading down there looking for new jobs and maybe feeling a little apprehensive about changing their position. You'll know what it's like though, Stephen, won't you, when you get a new role?
Yeah.
Taking on the new responsibilities. You were, and last time we spoke, actually, you were Shadow Education Secretary. Tell us about the new role that you've got at the moment.
So my new role is I'm part of the Shadow Justice team, and I lead on issues to do with democracy and constitutional change. So, for example, one of the areas that Labour has pledged to is to change the voting age from 18 to 16. So part of my job will be to work out the detail of how a future Labour government could deliver that change. We live in a time where people are very disconnected from politics, very disenchanted with politics, frankly, people of all ages, but especially young people. I've always thought that young people are very connected with the areas they live in. They care about the wider world, but they see formal traditional politics as really quite irrelevant to their lives. That's the challenge that I've now got to face up to.
Do you not think there's a danger, though, that politicians will embarrass themselves slightly by trying to appeal to 16 and 17 year olds if they do get the opportunity to vote. I can imagine some very cringeworthy YouTube videos of MPs wearing backwards baseball caps saying, "Hey, vote for me, kids."
Well, let me make a promise here and now that I will not be wearing a backward baseball cap. And my experience, you know, in the education role over the last 2 years, but also here in West Derby, when I visit schools and colleges and meet young people, actually, the sorts of issues that young people are raising with me aren't that different to the issues that older people raise when we knock on their doors. Young people are concerned about crime and antisocial behaviour in their communities. Young people are concerned about jobs for the future, just as older people are as well. Often young people will have stronger views on things like climate change and the environment, some of those sorts of questions. And maybe the health service is less of an issue with young people than older people. But the basic bread and butter concerns of the general population, in my experience, are shared by most young people. And I think we should treat 16, 17, 18 year olds with due respect. They often have very strong opinions and we should be listening to them.
And also, they have aspirations, don't they, at that age? Not that we don't when we get into later life, but it's better to vote then, isn't it? When you actually believe in something and haven't been bogged down with mortgages or having children, not that that can always bog you down. But having aspirations at that young age, I think, might free the mind slightly when deciding who's right for them and who to vote for.
I think that's an excellent point, the aspirations of young people. And also, we know that through a series of decisions over the last few years, young people have borne the brunt of many of the cuts, more than older sections of the population. Getting rid of the education maintenance allowance, the trebling of tuition fees, youth unemployment, all of those things are actually ways in which young people have been affected. And yet, if they're below the age of 18, they've got no voice over that. And that doesn't seem to me in a democracy to be right.
Stephen Twigg, thank you for your time. We'll talk some more about, I'm sure, the West Derby Jobs Fair next week. It's Thursday, the 31st of October, 10 till 4, Devonshire House Hotel, just off Edge Lane as well. If you want a job, there's 1,000. If you want an apprenticeship, there's 500, even more, in fact. And you can also get information, too, about your CV and interview technique and all that kind of stuff as well. There is a link on the City Talk 105.9 Twitter feed to the West Derby Jobs Fair link there. It's also on Facebook. If you just search for West Derby Jobs Fair, and Stephen's got all the information on his website too, which you can find stephentwiggmp.co.uk. Stephen, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.